Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
The story comes from Toronto. And what did this guy do for about 1/100th of the price of what the, you know, town government was looking to do and saying they could do it for?
He built stairs.
Stairs.
Stairs. You heard it here, folks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Looks like it's about 8 stairs.
8 stairs and a little
nice little
platform.
Little landing.
Yep. Landing.
Yep. So this comes to us from CTV News. Toronto man builds park stairs for $550, irking city after $65,000 estimate.
Wait,
I gotta love government.
So it's kind of like that whole bridge thing in Keene, right?
Yeah, so or any other bridge that government gets involved in. I'm going to get into the story and we'll talk about it. A Toronto man who spent $550 building a set of stairs in his community park says he has no regrets, despite the city's insistence that he should have waited for a $65,000 city project to handle the problem. The city is now threatening to tear down the stairs because they were not built to regulation standards.
Now, someone could wind up saying, well, he should have, if he was going to do this, he should have built it to whatever the regulation standards are.
Retired mechanic Adi Ostel said he took it upon himself to build the stairs after several neighbors fell down a steep path to a community garden in Tom Riley Park in Etobicoke, Ontario. Ostel says his neighbors chipped in on the project, which only ended up costing about $550, a far cry from the $65,000 to $150,000 price tag the city had estimated for the job. I thought they were talking about an escalator, Ostel told CTV News Channel on Wednesday. Ostel said he hired a homeless person to help him and built the 8 steps in a matter of hours. Ostel's wife, Gail Rutherford, said the stairs had already been a big help to people who routinely take that route through the park. I've seen so many people fall over that rocky path that was there to begin with. It's a huge improvement over what was there.
So this guy decided, you know what, the city is taking a long time to actually do this.
Right, dragging their feet.
They're going to wind up spending a lot more money than what it actually cost. I'll go ahead and do this myself.
I'm kind of curious to see what this guy's steps look like, though.
Oh, I'll show you the picture.
Are they like good quality, or are they like just these little?
That looks very
pictures,
nice.
They look good. My only complaint about these stairs, and you know, if I were building a set of stairs, I would have a handrail on both sides.
Right. Yeah.
So I could see that being a complaint, and maybe that's what they mean when they say that they were not in compliance with the code. Hey, Adi, put a rail on the other side. Maybe the picture was taken when he wasn't necessarily finished, like, I'm going to go have lunch now, and then I'll come back and rebuild the other side, and then, you know, cease and desist. I don't know.
Daryl can put the link up in show notes so people
it's
can take a look.
It's already in the show notes on the Facebook
the town,
and
if you ask
the Twitter.
Me, the town should fundraise for the stairs instead of taxing. You know what I mean?
I'd take that over that. Or to the point of this story, which I think is if somebody volunteers to fix a problem that everyone's going to benefit from, why stand in the way?
No, right. I'm one of those people where, like, I can appreciate the finer things in life. Like, I like those stairs, but I've seen prettier ones.
The tragedy in all this is that when we do these things, when government owns property, then it scales up or down. It can happen in a very, very small town. It can happen nationwide, like we have with our National Park Service. But there is still just this insane belief that none of these things could ever exist if it weren't for government. And a lot of people believe that.
Right.
We could never have our National Park Service if it wasn't for the Department of the Interior. Well, all that land was there before there was a Department of the Interior.
Right. And
why do you think, like, governments, like I've been doing a lot of, like, philosophical thinking lately. So, like, when it comes to, like, beaches and parks and stuff like that, like, why does government come to exist these things and maintain these things? Like, how does that occurrence happen? Like, Do you know what I mean? Is it just,
why do they do it?
Take it through eminent domain because they can manage it better than you can.
There's a long history of these things actually working. Never right. mind the fact that we have theme parks.
Right. And there, know, there's also example, the claim that...
Those are all privately owned, right?
Yes. Well, mostly there might be one or two somewhere that are owned by some government entity, but... You know, we're also told this great lie that arts would not exist without the National Endowment for the Arts. But yet, most art museums are either completely privately run, or they get such a small amount of funding from the National Endowment for the Arts to where it's minuscule and they could survive without that money. The same thing would be true of public spaes. And again, I mentioned Ducati Park, which is, you know, that... Famous for hosting the Occupy Wall Street thing. That was private land where the owner of that park said, yeah, you can have your rally thing here.
Mayor John Tory acknowledged that the city estimates sound, quote, completely out of whack with reality, unquote, on Wednesday.
Well, I'm glad he acknowledges that they sound completely out of whack with reality.
And what's the next word you
would have said? They are. Not they just sound, but they are.
You could not even be reading this story, and after a politician says that, you know the next word is going to be either but or however.
Right.
In this case, he chooses however. He says that still doesn't justify allowing private citizens to bypass city bylaws to build public structures themselves. Quote, I think everybody will understand that it will be more than $550, he said on Wednesday.
Yeah, it'll be about $600 once you add the other railing.
We just can't have people decide to go out to Home Depot and build a staircase in a park because that's what they would like to have. Well, no, that's not the point. The city already acknowledged that a set of stairs needed to be there.
Yes.
It's not like he came up with this idea on his own. The
right.
city and had these plans.
This is where, and, you know, Chris, I want your thoughts here because, you know, we're both firmly in the camp of governments should not own property.
Right.
What are your thoughts on collective ownership of property? So if a group called the Friends of Tom Riley Park...
I have no issue with that.
...decided that they wanted to oversee this and say a board of directors of five people...
Right.
All right. So that's my thought. There should be, you know, like some group could own this and oversee it. And, you know, maybe there already is a group called the Friends of Tom Riley Park. I don't know. So why authorize between $65,000 to $150,000 to build a set of stairs where this guy built some stairs if there's already a path, Mayor Tory?
Oh, you're trying to interject logic here, Daryl. Stop it. Who worried about falling down the incline, which is essentially a shortcut from the parking lot to the garden area. Well, oh, I'm sorry if you're an elderly person and you're going to work on this garden in this park, you probably do want to drive there and you probably want to take the shortest possible path to get there.
Wait, I have
so
a question.
What's wrong with this as a solution?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Okay, so all this is making me think about like government-owned lands and stuff like that. So, and then the theory you talked about the guy with the seals and how that turned out to work. And
not a theory.
What do you call them?
Facts?
No, the amusement parks and stuff. So I'm seeing all these privatized, you know, ways that certain things work. How would you go about, like, if government currently owns something or it's under government control, how do you go about, who decides, do you let government decide who gets to privately own it? And
no.
Like, is that the best solution?
I think you sell it off to the highest bidder.
If you could opt out of paying taxes, then it would be voluntary, right? So then you could say government is kind of like group insurance. So if everybody still paid into taxes, then it would make it so that they had more purchasing power and they could purchase more as a dues-paying member, you know what I mean? So, like, if we pay a bunch of taxes and that money is used to purchase land in another country, right, that goes up for private auction. Isn't that kind of what China owns a lot of rental and real estate property and stuff like that in America, I heard?
The Chinese own a lot of property here because they see it as the potential to make more money because it's a good investment. If I invest $10... then later on, I will get 20.
But do you see what
That's
I mean,
it.
Though? Like, if people could opt out of paying the taxes. And then it would just be like the remaining people that still paid in, and that would be their purchasing power, almost like group insurance.
So you're saying that if we magically waved a wand and tomorrow there were no more taxes?
No, there were taxes on, like you'd have to obviously like overhaul like the current system, but if there was a way that people that wanted to live off grid and not, you know, partake in the...
Sign me up.
Chris, we're going to talk about one of your most favoritest people in the whole wide world.
Gosh, how lucky can I be? I know who you're going to say.
Oh, wait, which one? It's one of
transportation pioneer Elon Musk.
Oh, okay.
The Washington Post has the article, says that Musk has been known to talk big and sometimes overpromise.
No.
But the Tesla chief and rocket builder took it up a notch Thursday, offering a tantalizing but so far undocumented announcement that his tunnel boring company, that, by the way, I had no clue he had one.
Oh, really?
Apparently, he has a tunnel boring company called The Boring Company.
Yeah, that's active in California.
He claims, and again, Washington Post says that he's offered the tantalizing but so far undocumented announcement that his tunnel boring company had received a verbal agreement from the government, or rather a verbal green light from the government, to build a super high-speed pod and tube transportation system that he calls the Hyperloop to travel between the District of Criminals and New York City. He posted on Twitter, "Just received verbal government approval for the Boring Company to build an underground New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, D.C. Hyperloop, New York to D.C. in 29 minutes.
This is an interesting point in history to live, because now we look back at all these government-sponsored boondoggles, and there's hundreds of them you can look at. You can look at everything from football stadiums to, you know, bridges to
railroads,
all sorts of things that, you know, all the benefit down. That's gonna come from all this, and you find out that they never live up to their promises. They never will,
right?
Because it's government who is benefiting first, and then it's all government's cronies who benefit second,
right?
And the people, if it happens to benefit them, it's pretty much by accident.
Well, the responses on Twitter were not necessarily ones of belief. Again, Washington Post has the story. They say that questioners on Twitter asked one of the most obvious questions. Who gave permission?
Verbal.
Elon Musk did not answer the questions. But he did wind up, according to the Washington Post, doing some moderating later in the day, sending out a tweet that says, "Still a lot of work needed to receive formal approval, but am optimistic that will occur rapidly." He followed that up with a tweet that says, "If you want this to happen fast, please let your local and federal elected representatives know. Makes a big difference if they hear from you."
I love it. I love it. Nothing will help me get those federal dollars in my greedy little hands faster than if you start bugging your legislatures. That's what he's saying. And it,
right.
Geez, drives me nuts.
And you know, because it's not just the money that he needs, but it's also the approval and eminent domain, again, in the District of Criminals, in Maryland, in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York, to wind up being able to build this New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, D.C. Hyperloop.
SpaceX is getting government contract money from NASA, even though they're not profitable.
Right.
But the money keeps flowing. Elon says, "Oh, we need more money to keep doing these NASA launches." So you, American taxpayer, keep giving Elon money just hand over fist. And this is one more way. I am convinced he's not even interested in technology anymore, which I think he was at one point. Mm-hmm. I think now he just sits around and noodles different ways that he can come up with a scam that will get him more money, more of your money, through the government and taxation. I think that's it.
Sounds kind of accurate.
I think we're just going to keep hearing this string of wacky Elon Musk ideas that are earth changing and life, and the only common thread.
Right, and then in like 20 years, it'll be like, oh yeah, that's just another wacky Elon.
Right, it'll become a joke. It'll become a punchline or it'll a derogatory term. Wow, he really musked that one up.
Or I just had a not so brilliant idea. Elon Musk will just, you know, like, lend his name out to various things. We'll have Musk University, Musk Steaks, you know, the Musk Hotel. And then
Musk
in like 24 years, Elon Musk will wind up being president of the United States.
Oh, come on, Daryl, that could never happen.
New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says this is news to us. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney says that there's been no contact between Musk and city officials, adding that we basically have no clue what you're talking about, and there are a lot of hurdles before this thing becomes reality. Elon Musk, on the other hand, says that he hopes to have all of the formal approvals by the end of the year. The article continues, building a Hyperloop above ground comes with enormous physical and regulatory challenges, which may be one reason Musk is considering going underground.
Jeez.
Not, you know, like doing it without government permissions, but actually, you know, taking the project beneath the surface right. of the earth.
Yep.
Using this boring tool from the Boring Company to bore a big giant hole that he'll put a really, really fast train into. And the article continues. It says, because Hyperloop technology involves traveling at extremely high speeds, any major turns could subject passengers to undue gravitational forces.
Oh, Jesus. I just got to stop you here, because we keep talking about Hyperloop and Hyperloop technology. There is no Hyperloop, folks. You can't go anywhere in the world and go ride the Hyperloop. It is hyperbole.
Loops implies like it's a big giant circle. You can't have, well,
a straight loop.
Well, you could, because, you know, a globe, but that would require you to go the entirety, you know, around the planet, and that's not possible or feasible because, you know, oceans. So this is just an absolutely horrible name. It's not a loop.
Oh, jeez.
Aside from, you know, all of the problems of we have no clue, even if he is able to, you know, like, dig a tunnel from D.C. to New York, and we don't know if he is able to do that.
Okay.
Even if he's able to dig a tunnel from New York to D.C.
Right.
Is he able to wind up putting a really fast choo-choo in that tunnel?
Okay, because this is not an Elon Musk brainstorm. He didn't come up with this on his own.
Hey, guys, I was wondering if you heard of the Darknet market bus today?
I did, and I've actually got a story in the show prep here, headline from the New York Times. We discussed last week the Alphabay getting shut down. Apparently, one of the markets that a bunch of Alphabay vendors and customers had gone to, Hansa Market, was just busted. And I've not read a lot about this, but like I said, I did have this in the show prep. So do you have anything other than just it happened?
Well, I guess it got busted like about a month ago, and the Dutch police have been running it since then, gathering information on people.
Great.
Wow.
Wait, what got busted? I'm a little out of the loop on this story.
The Hansa Market was an online market, was a competitor to Alphabay, competitor to Dream Market, Agora, which I think Agora shut down a while back. Sell?
These are all things that are similar to the Silk Road, which was an online darknet marketplace where people could buy and sell whatever they wished, and some of those things were illegal, like drugs.
I think a lot of times when people hear of like drugs and stuff like that, they automatically go right to the argument of drug users and people that abuse drugs, when even the drugs that are abused still have an intended purpose. Not only that, but let's say you're into science, right? And you want to maybe research further into the effects of these drugs, and you want to do so, and you want to do like controlled setting experiments, or, you know, expand on new things. Like, it's
and
not
you can't
everybody
do it through, right. You can't do it through your university because federal law prohibits you from doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So, right. you know, I think that when you think of like getting drugs, you know, off the market, let's say you have a sick relative or you can't get access to something and you can get it elsewhere. And, you know, you want to just try to see if it's going to help someone's symptoms. I don't think, right. you know, not everybody's out there looking to, like, you know, shoot up with a needle or something like that.
That's
that
a
where
really
they
good
might
point.
Have another reason to buy something off the black silk web or whatever. Even if it's like a like, look at the EpiPens nice. My mother uses, right, for example. Right. The cost of those are so high that it invites people to get it other locations and then sell on the dark web to people in America that, you know, it's the reason Eric Garner was selling loose cigarettes from another state because the taxes right. and fees right. and everything were so high.
The Newark riot, my 50 years, okay, that's quite a milestone. Mm-hmm. Which it happened in the year 1967. Now, we're not going to measure that according to the length of time since it happened, but what lesson has been learned? If I can answer my own question, white guilty workman. Good evening, Heather. How are you?
Go ahead. Answer your own question because I really have no clue what you're talking about, well, and you normally you know, try to answer your own questions anyway.
Lesson learned. Go
what
ahead.
What lesson has been learned 50 years since the Newark riot? But, you know, black are their own worst enemy. That's a given. That's a fact. We know that for a fact.
No, we don't know that for a fact.
I want to make the case. I figured out how to make a case for universal basic income, which some libertarians support. But it takes four steps, and I'm afraid I probably will have time for only one. So here we go. Imagine if you have an island where you have maybe 10 people, and there's a certain amount of food, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Would you consider it to be a market failure if, let's say, one of the people was the grocer, right? He was selling all the food. One person was really rich, came, bought all the food because he had the money, and the rest of the people starved.
Well,
would that be considered a market failure?
I would assume that if there are only 10 people on an island, somebody is also the farmer, or is this is just all
fishermen.
Growing wild? Fishermen?
Well, it's just oversimplifying it. But I'm
no,
saying,
no, but no, it's not oversimplifying it. I assume that somebody also makes fishing nets. Somebody also probably would make baskets to carry fruit in. And yes, there would be somebody there who would bring things to market. Now, it's not impossible that one person ends up dominating the market. So let's say it is the grocer that he is so successful and he's hired everybody else to go out and to collect the food and to bring it to him where he in turn sells it. He has no vested interest in pricing things so high that no one can afford it.
So, well, don't you think, too, the person that had all of the, let's say it was fish on this island, right? And you have one person that was the fisherman. Don't you think the other nine people on the island would be contributing something? So in order to get the one fisherman to sell all of the fish to somebody else would kind of deprive him of all of the benefits he got from the other nine people.
I want to plug a book, and the book is called How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. It's by Peter Schiff, which I think most of us in the room are probably at least familiar with. He's an economist and a gold trader and all
He's
sorts of...
He's most well known for his dad having gone to prison for
Absolutely.
Not paying federal income tax, I believe.
Irwin Schiff was a tax yes. protester who ended up passing away a couple years ago. But it's interesting because this book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes, basically starts out with the premise that there is this small desert island with a limited number of people on it, a limited number of products, and he goes through how an economy organically basically grows and comes up, and some of the things that the islanders may do that cause the economy to crash, which things do go wrong, and people do things sometimes in their own self-interest that end up biting them in the butt.
Right.
So it's a really good book. It's really short. I think it's 256 pages. It's almost written like a children's book, but you're going to really enjoy it.
From the Washington Post, they say an anti-government strike paralyzed large sections of Venezuela on Thursday as the nation risked spiraling into a deeper crisis ahead of a vote that many fear could move the country further down the path of authoritarian rule. President Nicolas Maduro played down the strike, and some areas in the capital and elsewhere appeared less affected But in many districts, a significant number of businesses were shuttered and protesters blocked roads as the opposition sought to stage Venezuela's largest general strike in 15 years. In Caracas, the strike was most pronounced in the eastern neighborhoods, a middle and upper class bastion. In the neighborhood of Los Ruizes, Venezuelan National Guard forces fired tear gas at protesters near the headquarters of the pro-government TV station Venezuelano de Televisión.
Wouldn't you think, though, like with all of the uprising and stuff that the government's dealing with, like, wouldn't it be in their own best interest to not hoard the food from them? Why are they doing it?
They're not hoarding the food. There is no food.
So, right. And there's no food because the government doesn't have any more money to what?
The government has socialized every aspect of their lives.
Because, you know, as Chris pointed out, they've socialized everything. They've seized plants. They've seized farms. They've told people, you're not allowed to go work in this thing. You've got to go work in this field. But yeah, because nobody has money for the farmers don't have money to buy the seeds to plant crops. So if you can't plant a crop, you can't grow food.
Nothing
if you
to harvest.
Can't grow food, there's nothing to harvest, which means there's nothing for the government to seize.
See what I mean?
So how big is Venezuela's government?
Immense, like all governments. But the more important point is
Venezuela is so broke they can't print money. They're so broke they have ships that are full of oil that cannot be sent out of port because they can't be inspected to make sure that they're safe to actually leave port.
Right.
That is how poor this country is.
This is how socialism works.
One of the residents of Caracas, Edmund Farkey, says, we put up the barricades around 5 a.m. The objective is that no one goes to work. People stay home for 24 hours. We want liberty. We want democracy. We want everyone to have access to food. Alfredo Romero, co-director of Foro Penal, a human rights group that defends political prisoners, tweeted out earlier today that at least 82 protesters had been arrested as of Thursday afternoon. The opposition efforts unfolded as Maduro's unpopular socialist government faced escalating international pressure to back off of a special election scheduled for July 30th. The vote, if approved, would elect a body to rewrite the 1999 Constitution and further squelch the opposition-controlled National Assembly in a move widely viewed by critics as a power grab. So just to sort of rephrase this a little bit, the National Assembly is the Venezuelan version of Congress. The Venezuelan version of Congress, the National Assembly, is made up of people that don't really like Maduro's policies, but they don't have a lot of power anyway.
Right.
And this rewrite of the 1999 Constitution would take away their limited power to be even less powerful.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more. All for free at freetalklive.com.